You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more. Seth, what do you make of this? Obviously, Dubas wanted a little bit more control or power in Toronto, didn't get it, so he's going to Pittsburgh, and he's the grand poobah.
Yeah, that was one thing he maybe pointed out today, that he'll probably be the general manager, maybe for the time being, maybe into July, once they get past free agency, then he'll maybe, you know, dig in a little bit more and, you know, look for candidates to be the GM. Frankly, I think it's almost going to be like a situation like you see in Colorado where Joe Sakic's the president of the hockey operations, kind of steers the ship, and Chris McFarland's the GM and does a lot more of the granular work, you know, contracts and, you know, call-ups and basically make sure the engine's running. So I kind of think that's almost going to be how things work out here in Pittsburgh. But, yeah, certainly Kyle Dubas is this is his team in more ways than one moving forward.
So you look at this team, and I was crunching some numbers, doing an article the other day about the top seven salaries on each team, and Pittsburgh's actually comes in at 25th. They're not top heavy. Not, I don't even buy into top heavy, really, but they don't spend a lot right now comparatively to the other teams' top seven AAVs in the NHL. So they've got room to spend elsewhere. Now, they got some contracts. Maybe people don't love the Granlund trade. It didn't work out at the end of the season. Maybe it'll bounce back next year. We'll see, but when you look at Dubas, what do you look at his top two main priorities that he has to do first?
Well, the first priority above anything else is the goaltender. You have to figure out what Tristan Jarry's future, if any, is with the franchise. I mean, it's the guy that they want many years ago under Ray Sherrow. It's hard to believe that's like four general managers ago now, but they thought he could be the goaltender of the future. And, you know, it kind of played out to that to some degree. It just, he has not had playoff success. His one and only playoff really appearance of note was the just disastrous you know, blow up against the New York Islanders in 2021, where he just looked awful. And last year against the Rangers, he just wasn't healthy enough. And frankly, this past season, he dealt with a whole variety of injuries that really hindered his play down the stretch, and was a major contributing factor as to why the franchise didn't make the playoffs for the first time in, what, 16, 17 years. So they have to figure out what's up with him. There's not many options internally in terms of anyone they can call from the American League or a prospect or anything like that, so they might have to go outside the organization. The free agent market for goaltenders is kind of weak, so you might have to explore a trade there. But and Kyle Dubas acknowledged all those points there. He seems to realize that there is talent in Tristan Jarry. He was a second-round pick, you know, many years ago, so there is a high pedigree there. But they have to make, I would say, their first and, you know, most daunting decision is to make is with the goaltender. Beyond that, I mean, I would say maybe their most prominent player beyond Jarry is Jason Zucker. This is the guy who rebounded pretty nicely after a few injury-filled seasons. He's a 20-goal scorer. Meshed very well with Evgeny Malkin on their second line, and really kind of established a good attitude on a team that, you know, frankly, there wasn't many sources of that, and, you know, just given how dire their situation was going down the stretch. So, I mean, first and foremost, though, it's just the goaltending. You have to figure that out. Even on a team with, you know, icons like Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, it's still the most important position on the team, and they won't know their direction until they know who's their top goaltender going in next season.
Like, when you look at the free agent market and you look at the uncertainty of goaltenders, like Tristan Jarry, like, this seems to me from an outsider, Seth, like an obvious choice. No? To be him?
I'm sorry, you faded out there. Can you repeat that story?
No, I was saying that when you look at the volatility of goaltending for a lot of them from year to year, then the available goaltenders on the market, Tristan Jarry would seem like the obvious choice to bring back.
He would. It's just a matter of what he wants out there. I mean, right now he's at $3.5 million, I believe, his cap hit. I mean, if he wants something close to $6 or $7 million, and hey, for a starting goaltender, that's a fair amount. You look at a guy like Elvis Merzlikin in Columbus, he's making like $5.4 or something like that. So if Tristan Jarry asks something that's beyond their means, they may very well be justified in looking somewhere elsewhere. I mean, maybe you go after like a Jonas Donskoy. I got my Eunice's mixed up there. Maybe you look at him. You know, maybe you look at Semyon Varlamov on maybe a short-term two-year deal. There are some options. It's just there's not very many good ones, and I'm not sure there's many good ones that are better than Tristan Jarry just based on his on his talent level. It's just, I think there's enough people in the organization that still like Tristan Jarry and have some faith in him, but if you're looking at it objectively from an outsider's perspective, which Kyle Dubas pretty much is at this juncture in his, you know, very short tenure here still with the Penguins, you can probably go out and, you know, maybe find a cheaper option that can get you at the very least, you know, a few steps further towards being a playoff team. I mean, yeah, it's a weird dichotomy here with the Stanley Cup final. I mean, you have Sergei Bobrovsky, $10 million a year for Florida Panthers, and then you have Aiden Hill, you know, basically the Vegas Golden Knights, like fourth or fifth option here. So I don't know that there's necessarily a wrong way, but I think it would be wrong to maybe rule out any one option, just given how volatile the position is, as you said.
Seth Robart joins us, Edmonton Sports Hitter, TSN 1260. Brian Dumoulin, what do you think happens to him?
I think his days with the Penguins are over, to be frank. And, you know, I don't take any joy in saying that. I think he's maybe one of the best defensive defensemen in franchise history, you know, going all the way back to Dave Burrows in the 70s, if you want. Just he's at the stage of his career. He's on the other side of 30. I think he's 31 now. Had a fairly big cap hit. He's about to finish up his contract here. He's always been a nice complimentary piece to Chris Letang, but for the last year or two, ever since he suffered a pretty nasty skate cut on his, I think it was like Achilles tendon a few years ago in a game in St. Louis, he just hasn't necessarily been the same defenseman or nearly as effective. And, you know, and frankly, they have a couple good young options on the left side of their defense right now. Marcus Pedersen's a player who really took a step forward to filled in for Dumoulin on the first pairing at times last season. They have P.O. Joseph, a former first-round pick of the Coyotes, who they got in the Phil Kessel trade a few years ago. And they have Ty Smith, you know, the former first-round pick of the Devils that they got in the John Marino trade last summer. So they have some younger and, more importantly, cheaper options on the left side of defense there. And you know, I just think a lot of those factors, including Brian Dumoulin's, you know, effectiveness at this stage of his career, is going to lead to him probably playing for another team next season.
Well, I look at Dumoulin, and it was interesting you mentioned his injury, because he has looked a tad slower, because, man, when they won Stanley Cups, he was so good defensively. He could just shut guys down. It was a really good positional defender. Maybe he's only a third pair D guy right now, but what kind of money do you think he would get? And do you see him more as a third pairing guy, or do you think there's a chance that if he can find some foot speed, he could get back to being a second pair?
Well, he came off a contract where he was $4.1 million, so, I mean, presumably something less than that. I mean, if you bring in a guy, it's, I don't know if you'd say $2.8 million, that seems affordable to me if you want him to be a third-pairing guy for you, a PK guy for you. There's a lot of intangibles with him. I mean, this is a guy that he's very well respected in the Penguin room. Anytime a younger player maybe has a mistake, he's a guy that's, you know, pretty commonly acknowledged that he'll pull a guy aside and say, hey, we need you, forget it. You know, a really good vocal leader in the room. And there's something to be said for that. And that, you know, gets backed up by him having two Stanley Cup rings. And you mentioned him being very good. I mean, in particular, his run in 2017 when Chris Letang was out of the lineup with a herniated disc in his neck. Brian Dumoulin was their top defenseman, played on the top pairing with, I think, Ron Hainsey during that run and really kind of helped establish things for them on defense, and was really a rock for them on defense. But things were still in flux with a lot of injuries, most notably Chris Letang. But, you know, if he can regain some foot speed, if he can, you know, stay healthy, which, you know, he played all 82 games last season, which was a career achievement for him, actually, just given the way he played, you know, absorbing a lot of abuse, you know, hits, shots, things like that. If he can stay healthy, I mean, he's still a viable player if you give him a reduced role compared to what he's enjoyed here in Pittsburgh throughout most of his time here.
Chris Letang, you know, he was able to overcome the stroke last season. How much of a concern is that for the Penguins? How you can't really predict strokes, of course. He's had two. They were 6 years apart, though. But where's his health at?
His health, he dealt with obviously a very difficult season last year. Obviously, the strokes, you know, the first thing that stands out. He had a couple other knick-knack injuries, particularly around New Year's, cost him a few games. And he also, at the time, unfortunately, you know, his father passed away right on New Year's Eve, I believe it was. So he took some time away from the team. And it was really a trying season for him on a lot of levels. Even then, he still managed to, you know, piece together, I want to say, like 40 points in like 60 games or something like that. And that's without like a really, you know, good power play whatsoever for the Penguins this past season. But as far as the stroke, you know, concerns, they're always going to be there. It's always going to be legitimate. It's because of a hole he has in his heart that he was born with. And that's okay. Something he's always going to have to deal with. But he's roundly credited as being, you know, really maybe the most fittest athlete on the team, and that's saying something when you have a guy like Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin in your midst. This is a guy that invests a lot of money in terms of keeping his body right. When he signed the 6-year contract last summer, he said he thinks he could probably play till he's 42, 43 and play out the life of the contract. So, I have to imagine, you know, his numbers would have been a lot better if he didn't deal with, you know, all the strife he did last season. But, you know, things are right for him, and that's always a big if. It's always a very just concern. He's still capable of being a very good number one defenseman. A guy plays 24, 25 minutes for you. A guy can probably put up, you know, 10 goals, 50 points over the course of the season, and just be your everything defenseman, number one defenseman in just about every situation.
What about their power play? What has to change? Why was it so bad last year? Because in today's NHL, man, like, if you don't have a power play, you really don't have much of a chance.
It's really befuddling because they do have the talent. You have Sidney Crosby, you have Evgeny Malkin, you have Jake Guentzel as a 40-goal guy. Chris Letang, as I mentioned, a big prominent part of that. Ricard Raquel kind of, you know, took a place on that group last year. The pieces are there. I'm not even sure it's necessarily even the structure. I mean, they largely use the structure that's been, you know, successful for them in years past. I don't know if it's just a matter of, you know, maybe they fought it, overfought it a little bit too much, you know, paralysis through analysis, if you will. They like to move things around. They're not really a big kind of like shoot and crash power play where, you know, they just, you know, get points, you know, shots from the perimeter and just crash in on it. They like to do a lot of puck movement, you know, player movement. You know, no one player except for maybe Chris Letang at the points really set in a position. So I'm wondering, you know, it's such a cliche thing to say, oh, you got to simplify, but I think that's really a thing that they need to really embrace here. And I almost wonder if there's maybe a disease, if you will, when you are a Hall of Fame player, when you are an all-star player, where you have to, you can't score ugly goals. You have to score pretty goals. You're almost kind of wired that way. And I almost think the Penguins have to convince a bunch of 30-somethings who have been, you know, to the highs of the highest of the highs here in the NHL that you have to play a little uglier to be a more effective power play. I mean, the talent's there, the structure that they've had success with is there. The familiarity you would assume is there with all these players. Just the results have not been there. And I have to imagine it's probably a leading concern for the coaching staff this offseason. They're going to try to figure something out here going into next season.
And lastly, about the coaching staff, we know that Mike Sullivan's been there a long time. He's very intertwined with the organization. He's considered one of the best coaches in the NHL. I don't see any change there. But what do you see him like? How many guys does he want to bring back from his bottom six?
Well, I think if it was up to him, he'd clear out the whole group. You know, there were times last year when we would ask him about the bottom six, and he would just snap back at us. Like, you guys ask me about this all the time. The answer is the same. We're just trying to do what we can do. They had some salary cap limitations where even calling up someone from Wilkes-Barre-Scranton in the American Hockey League was a major endeavor because they had so little salary cap space. And they had guys like Jeff Carter, you know, early in the season, Brock McGinn, and, you know, some others who just weren't all that effective. And, you know, they brought in Josh Archibald, and they thought he could be kind of like a energy guy. And he was maybe in a little space, but not nearly enough. And even when they did have enough salary cap space to bring up someone like, say, a Philip Holland or you know, Jonathan Gruden, those players just, I don't know that they necessarily had the trust of Mike Sullivan to command more minutes or more meaningful roles. So Kyle Dubas really kind of, you know, put a bit of a spotlight on the bottom six, said, hey, we have to kind of figure out what's going on here. Jeff Carter's still under contract. Mikael Granlund's a guy that they have to figure out what's going on with his contract. It's something that's going to have to undergo some significant surgery here, I think, in the next few weeks here going into free agency. And they have to figure out what they want to do there because it was really a major component as to why this team failed to make the playoffs for the first time in more than a decade and a half.
Seth, great rundown, man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the offseason. It should be an interesting one in Pittsburgh.
Anytime, guys. Be well.